11. When Ralph got to Flint City's much smaller cop shop, meaning to call Deborah Grant before picking up a cruiser for the run to Cap City, Bill Samuels was waiting for him. He looked sick. Even the alfalfa cowlick was drooping. "What's wrong?" Ralph asked. Meaning, what else? "Alec Pelley texted me with a link." He unbuckled his briefcase, brought out his iPad, the big one, of course, the Pro, and powered it up. He tapped a couple of times, then passed it to Ralph. The text from Pelley read, "Are you sure you want to pursue a case against T. Maitland? Check this first." The link was beneath. Ralph tapped it. What came up was a website for Channel 81. Cap City's Public Access Resource. Beneath it was a block of videos showing city council meetings, a bridge reopening, a tutorial called Your Library and How to Use It, and one called New Additions to the Cap City Zoo. Ralph looked at Samuels questioningly. "Scroll down." Ralph did, and found one titled, "Harlan Coben Speaks to Tri-State English Teachers." The play icon was superimposed over a bespectacled woman with hair so arduously sprayed it looked as if you could bounce a baseball off it without hurting the skull beneath. She was at a podium. Behind her was the Sheraton Hotel's logo. Ralph brought the video up to full screen. "Hello, everybody. Welcome. I'm Josephine McDermott, this year's president of the Tri-State Teachers of English. I'm so happy to be here and to officially welcome you to our yearly meeting of the minds. Plus, of course, a few adult beverages." This brought a murmur of polite laughter. "Our attendance this year is particularly good, and while I'd like to think my charming presence has something to do with it," more polite laughter, "I think it probably has more to do with today's amazing guest speaker." "Maitland was right about one thing," Samuel said. "The fucking introduction goes on and on. She runs down just about every book the guy ever wrote. Go to 9 minutes and 30 seconds. That's where she winds it up." Ralph slid his finger along the counter at the bottom of the vid, now sure of what he was going to see. He didn't want to see it, and yet he did. The fascination was undeniable. "Ladies and gentlemen, please give a warm welcome to today's guest speaker, Mr. Harlan Coben." From the wing strode a bald gentleman so tall that when he bent to shake hands with Ms. McDermott, he looked like a guy greeting a child in a grown-up's dress. Channel 81 had deemed this event interesting enough to spring for 2 cameras, and the picture now switched to the audience, which was giving Coben a standing O. And there, at a table near the front, were 3 men and a woman. Ralph felt his stomach take the express elevator down. He tapped the video, pausing it. "Christ," he said. "It's him. Terry Maitland with Roundhill, Quaid, and Grant. Based on the evidence we have in hand, I don't see how it can be, but it sure as hell looks like him." Bill. For a moment, Ralph couldn't go on. He was utterly flabbergasted. "Bill, the guy coached my son. It doesn't just look like him. It is him." "Coben speaks for about 40 minutes. It's mostly just him at the podium, but every now and then there are shots of the audience laughing at some of the witty stuff he says. He's a witty guy, I'll give him that. Or just listening attentively. Maitland, if it is Maitland, is in most of those shots. But the nail in the coffin is right around minute 56. Go there." Ralph went to minute 54, just to be safe. By then, Coben was taking questions from the audience. "I never use profanity in my books for profanity's sake," he was saying. "But under certain circumstances, it seems absolutely appropriate. A man who hits his thumb with a hammer doesn't say, 'Oh, pickles.'" Laughter from the audience. "I have time for 1 or 2 more. How about you, sir?" The picture switched from Coben to the next questioner. It was Terry Maitland, in a big fat close-up, and Ralph's last hope that they were dealing with a double, as Jeannie had suggested, evaporated.
"Do you always know who did it when you sit down to write, Mr. Coben? Or is it sometimes a surprise even to you?"
The picture switched back to Coben, who smiled and said, "That's a very good question." Before he could give a very good answer, Ralph backed up to Terry, standing to ask his question. He stared at the image for 20 seconds, then handed the iPad back to the district attorney.
"Poof," Samuel said. "There goes our case."
"DNA still pending," Ralph said, or rather heard himself say. He felt divorced from his own body. He supposed it was how boxers felt just before the ref stopped the fight. "And I still need to talk to Deborah Grant. After that, I'm going up to Cap City to do some old-school detective work. Get off my ass and knock on doors, like the man said. Talk to people at the hotel and at the fire pit where they went to dinner. Then, thinking of Jeannie, I want to look into the possibility of forensic evidence as well."
"Do you know how unlikely that is in a big city hotel, the best part of a week after the day in question?"
"I do."
"As for the restaurant, it probably won't even be open."
Samuel sounded like a kid who's just been pushed down on the sidewalk by a bigger kid and scraped his knee. Ralph was coming to realize he didn't like this guy very much. He came across more and more as a quitter. "If it's near the hotel, chances are they'll be open for brunch." Samuel shook his head, still peering at the frozen image of Terry Maitland.
"Even if we get a DNA match, which I'm starting to doubt, you've been in this job long enough to know that juries rarely convict based on DNA and fingerprints. The OJ trial is an excellent case in point."
"The eyewits.
Gold will demolish them on cross. Stanhope, old and half blind. Isn't it true you gave up your driver's license 3 years ago, Mrs. Stanhope? June Morris, a kid who saw a bloody man from across the street. Scowcroft was drinking and so was his buddy. Claude Bolton's got a drug jacket. The best you've got is Willow Rainwater. And I've got news for you, buddy. In this state, people still don't care much for Indians, don't much trust them."
"But we're in too deep to back out," Ralph said.
"That happens to be the dirty truth."
They sat silently for a bit. Ralph's office door was open and the station's main room was almost deserted as it usually was on Sunday mornings in this small southwestern city. Ralph thought of telling Samuels that the video had jolted them away from the elephant in the room. A child had been murdered, and according to every bit of evidence they had gleaned, they had the man who'd done it. That Maitland appeared to have been 70 miles away was something that had to be addressed and clarified. There could be no rest for either of them until it was. "Come up to Cap City with me if you want to."
"Not going to happen," Samuel said. "I'm taking my ex-wife and the kids to Lake Okoma. She's bringing a picnic. We're finally back on good terms, and I'd like not to jeopardize that."
"Okay." The offer had been half-hearted anyway. Ralph wanted to be by himself. He wanted to try to get his head around what had seemed so straightforward and was now looking like a colossal clusterfuck. He stood up. Bill Samuels put his iPad back in his briefcase and then stood up beside him.
"I think we could lose our jobs over this, Ralph. And if Maitland walks, he'll sue.
You know he will. Go on to your picnic. Eat some sandwiches. This isn't over yet." Samuels left the office ahead of him, and something about his walk, the slumped shoulders, the briefcase banging dispiritedly at his knee, infuriated Ralph. "Bill." Samuels turned. "A child in this town was viciously raped. Either before or just after, he may have been bitten to death. I'm still trying to get my head around that. Do you think his parents give a rodent's behind if we lose our jobs or the city gets sued?" Samuels made no reply, only crossed the deserted squad room and went out into the early morning sunshine. It was going to be a great day for a picnic, But Ralph had an idea the DA wasn't going to enjoy it much.